Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. If you're someone who has submitted a disability claim, you might want to know that insurance companies may be investigating that claim to ensure that it is valid. And, you know, there's lots of ways that they can go about this, but one of them could be surveillance. To talk about this process, how common it is in Canada, we're joined by Nainish Kotak, founder of Kotak Personal Injury Law. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
I am well. So someone who has to file a disability claim is already in a pretty tough spot. And on the other side, the insurance company wants to ensure that they're paying out on a valid claim. So they've got some ways to do that. Broadly speaking, and then we'll talk about some of the specifics, but broadly speaking, how do insurance companies investigate these claims?
Right. So a couple of ways. First, there's going to be an investigation of medical records, employment records, medical records. Those are standard items that they would look for in a claim, getting your doctor to fill out forms. But often it does go further than that because those claiming disability, they've obviously complain about their symptoms to the insurer, but also to their treating physicians. Sometimes insurance companies will test that by conducting surveillance in various forms to see whether or not the person is accurately reporting their symptoms, and also to get a general idea in terms of how they're functioning in their day-to-day activities.
And how would they go about that? I can think of all the, you know, the TV versions of what that means, you know, like hiding cameras and hanging from trees, but what do they actually do in practice?
Right. So the cheapest way is to scour somebody's social media. Look at their LinkedIn. Are they listing themselves as currently working? Do they have any side gigs? Are they looking for work? Do they have a Facebook account that may be public where they're posting pictures of themselves, potentially doing activities maybe that they allegedly say that they cannot do? So those are cheap, easy ways that insurers may conduct surveillance from social media. The next way is really that old cloak and dagger approach, hiring a private investigator to stake outside the person's home and sort of follow them during the day as to where they go and what activities they do, and then assess whether or not what they observed and what they took pictures of is consistent with the complaints that the person has made.
What would prompt an insurance company to take that additional, more costly step? Would it be red flags that have been illuminated on social media? Would it be the cost of the claim? Like, what would have them take that step?
I think they look for sort of time periods in the litigation process or in the claim, in addition to maybe red flags that have been discovered. I find they cannot survey every single claim. It just would be simply too expensive. So, it may be there's a procedure happening in the litigation, a pretrial is coming up, a trial is coming up, a mediation is coming up, where they need to put forth their case. So in the weeks or month or two preceding that event, you may see surveillance so that they can, produce that in a way to discredit the claimant or use it as a bargaining chip in any form of negotiation.
The word disability applies to, so many things. It could be a car accident in which you're laid up in bed and there's really no risk you're going to go out and do anything because you're still in hospital, to these days, people who are dealing with something like long COVID, where, your cranial capacity is intact and it may be that your energy level is so diminished that you can't perform your job, but you could still go for a walk or something like that. What's the line?
Right. So I find you'll see surveillance happen in specific types of legal cases, and that would be long-term disability claims, personal injury matters, and potentially employment lawsuits or claims. Where I think the line gets blurred is when it comes to the illnesses from that are mental in origin, so mental illness, those disability claims. For example, someone may say, well, I simply I don't leave my house. I go for a walk, maybe a block. I just don't feel like it. I can't socialize with people. But they're seen maybe walking two blocks or three blocks or having somebody over. And that, you know, the issue then becomes is really how relevant that is. Insurance companies may say in their argument, well, you know, you were not credible with your description of your functional abilities. And the response to that, well, you know, there are good days and bad days. Just because they're seen out, you know, maybe with a friend or going for a longer walk, it's not the same thing as being able to work at their form of employment or another form of employment. So that is where sometimes, you know, it's very subjective how you look at these. We tend to ask insurers that ultimately look at the whole picture here. You can't just isolate a day in one's life. Now, listen, it could be once in a blue moon. Insurers will hit a jackpot, right? You know, it doesn't happen all the time, quite frankly. It's not like TV where, boom, they're going to produce something. But it has happened once in a while. You know, they've got the person. Maybe they're working and they say they're not. You know, maybe they're doing significant activity when they've said they haven't. And those can be quite damaging to cases, obviously. But those are really the rare circumstances, in fact, where that happens.
What are your rights as an individual? So I get it. Your social media platforms are public. Anybody, unless they're blocked, anybody can go and look at what you've got on Instagram, LinkedIn, whatever. Less so having a private investigator parked in a car across from my house.
Right. So, you know, in terms of the advice I would give, so let's, you know, you mentioned the social media, Instagram, et cetera. Is to make the them private. Now, courts have still ordered disclosure of private accounts, but usually in the context where it used to be public, there were posts that would suggest that, you know, there are credibility issues, then you made it private. They may, and they have said, no, now you still need to disclose the private post as well, because there's a basis to it that we've seen the public post. With respect to otherwise, you know, private, keeping them private should protect you. With respect to surveillance, look, they cannot go into your home or go onto your private property, but when you're off of there, or if they're filming sort of you on your lawn or your driveway, that is fair game, because there's really what's called no reasonable expectation of privacy in those simple settings. They're not in your property, they're not on your property. So that's fair game as I see it. And, you know, in terms of the pictures they've taken or the videos they've taken, they in fact often involve the person, you know, leaving their home, going shopping, going to Tim Hortons, getting their coffee, doing their groceries. And that, quite frankly, is fair game. Costly, but fair game.
Sure. I doubt you can answer this with data, because it seems like an impossible number to get. But how often do you think insurance companies do take on surveillance of some form at the low end, social media, at the high end, an investigator?
Right. So I can only go sort of with my own cases. I would say I'm seeing some sort of surveillance, whether it be they've producing a video, or they've said, hey, you know, your client had these posts, probably in maybe 10% or less of cases, quite frankly. And video probably less than that, right? So I don't see it as being something that is used all the time. Now, the caveat to this, Bruce, is this. Maybe they've done it, but they haven't really seen anything relevant. And if we're not at a stage of examination for discovery where they have to produce their affidavit of documents, we don't see it. It may be a case that's resolving at mediation before discovery, where they found something that's really not relevant. We don't know about it, right? I mean, that certainly could happen. I wouldn't be able to keep stats on that. But generally, I would say it is just slightly, probably less than 10% of claims.
I want to ask you one last question, and I don't mean to be controversial when I ask this. It's a genuine question. I wish personal injury law didn't exist. And I say that because in a world of rainbows, unicorns, and butterflies, I want people to buy an insurance policy and then be paid out based on that policy, making your sector irrelevant. That is obviously not the case and not going to happen. What would you say about the role you play in helping people get the money that they deserve, and that the insurance companies are able to run their business.
You know, I see claims on a very personal level. My clients, I know their story. And with respect to long-term disability cases, I've seen such horrific treatment that they've undergone. I've seen people who have had such tragedy in their lives. It could be abuse, sexual abuse. It could be extreme stress in the workplace, deaths in their family, and having their claims denied. I've seen clients in despair going broke and not being supported by insurance companies. So I'm actually very proud of the role that I play with those clients. Insurance companies are in the business of making money. They have shareholders. They would not be doing this if there's not a profit. So obviously they need to make a profit. But I also think that, and particularly in the car accident world, where everything is sort of so pro-insurance in terms of legislation, in terms of the way they handle claims and delay things, I think that they need to take a second look at how they deal with those types of claims. And certainly the legislature needs to also do the same and not have such a one-sided system. When it comes to long-term disability, I do see the denials, but I also do see, when we're resolving the cases, some compassion from them. We go to the mediation. I do know a lot of the lawyers. I've dealt with them so many times, and they behave very professionally. And you do hear from the claims examiners genuine care for the clients. So it's not that I'm here saying insurance companies are bad, bad, bad. I'm just saying that with respect to, for example, auto insurance, it is a mess. It is terrible and so biased against claimants. And long-term disability, unfortunately, some very valid claims are denied. Because their insurance companies are in the business of making money. They need to do that. If they paid out every claim, they would not be making money. So they like to, I wouldn't say like to, that's probably a bad word, but when they deny a claim and there's litigation, they're not paying 100 cents on the dollar. They're saving money in the resolution of those claims.
I think the biggest takeaway for me in our conversation is that for someone who is on LTD, on long-term disability, they have to navigate their health issues and another file that they will have to carry and work on is how they navigate the insurance component, making sure they're on side with all the things that they need to do and be aware of what the insurance company will do to protect their interests. Nanesh, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Nanesh Kotak is founder of Kotak Personal Injury Law, and we were talking about disability claims and in particular, the lengths to which insurance companies can go to use surveillance to either dispute or assess a particular claim.